is your home of the Columbus Blue Jackets. Sports Radio 97.1 The Fan.
Find the trailer, shot, score!
You are now listening to The Inside Edge with Jody Shelley and Bob Bigelli. This is your inside perspective on the NHL, players, the Blue Jackets, and more.
Watch with us. Brought to you by Ohio Health, Nationwide Insurance, Eldorado Scioto Downs, and Huntington.
Here's former Jacket Jody Shelley and the voice of the Jackets, Bob Bigelli.
Welcome to the Inside Edge here on 97.1 The Fan. I'm Bob McElligan, joined by Jody Shelley. The Blue Jackets today going to Carolina, where they get set to play the Hurricanes tomorrow. It's going to be the first of a back-to-back set of games in Carolina tomorrow and then playing in Chicago on Friday. Jody, it's amazing that the Blue Jackets have come as far as they have this year. They have 105 points after their win last night. And yet they've got to play a Carolina team that is only a couple of points out of the playoff race, hoping to get in. They'll be desperate, and they play great at home. Then you've got to take on the Chicago Blackhawks, who are also over 100 points, vying for the President's Trophy for best record in the regular season. Haven't seen them since Game 3, and they happen to be on the schedule here on the right here at the end of the year on this road trip. And then if you get through all of that, you get the Washington Capitals at home on Sunday and the Pittsburgh Penguins on the road on Tuesday. There is nothing easy about this season for the Blue Jackets.
Bob, you know what? You said it's amazing off the top. You know what's amazing to me is that they've already played 75 games. There's only 7 games left on the season. And you think about the NHL season, this has been enjoyable to watch. And for us as broadcasters, how much fun. And they, you know what? Time flies when you're having fun. And the schedule has been condensed. It seems like it's every other day. And I think that's helped the Blue Jackets. You look at where they're sitting. You look at the 7 games remaining. And whoever the genius is behind the scheduling. I know there's some complaints from time to time. But to have these 3 teams, really the Columbus Blue Jackets control their own destiny. Carolina, as you mentioned, they're only 4 points behind Boston. Now, Boston with a big win last night to kind of get a little more breathing room. But Carolina is going nowhere, and the Blue Jackets are going into kind of a bee's nest there, beehive, as far as what they're going to bring, as you said. And you got to love the weekend. You just listed it out. Chicago, Washington, and Pittsburgh. I mean, could you draw it up any better? And the reason why I like that, too, in a certain degree is – You talk to Torts all the time, and you get great stuff out of him. And him telling you that there's a lull, there's a little bit of a dip after you clinch. I don't think they'll be able to play those teams with a dip. I think there's going to be an emotional attachment to some degree, obviously. Maybe not so much with Chicago, but definitely with Washington and Pittsburgh. And I think that's at a good time for the Blue Jackets. You're talking maybe 9 to 10 days before the drop of the playoff season for the Blue Jackets. And that's kind of a good way, a good reminder, actually, for the second to last weekend before the season closes.
Would you consider last night's win over Buffalo 3-1? They get the victory. They get the 2 points. They break the tie with Pittsburgh for the moment. Penguins are playing tonight against Chicago. But would you consider that part of that lull? Because, again, not much offense, finding a way to get through, and really riding on the back of your goaltender, Sergei Bobrovsky.
Yeah, and we talked about it last night in the postgame show. You know, they're getting it done. And it's not the high-octane 4 lines building off each other, creating momentum in situations, feeding off a power play that's hot. It's a goalie that has no dip and is getting better and better and better because that's what he wants to do and that's what he has to do. And the players around him finding a way, maybe searching a little bit for the emotion. I think it's hard as a player when there's not that emotional attachment to really find your game. Some guys are emotion-driven, and it's funny to watch them, and it's interesting to watch them. You know, guys like Nick Foligno, he can't just go out and try to play. He's got to have that emotion. He's got to get run over or be playing the Penguins. Cam Atkinson's a guy who's found the back of the net last night, but he's been kind of on the perimeter, kind of searching, looking for an easy game, and that's just part of it. So, I think that's part of what's happening here, Bob, is there's an emotion. There's players who need emotion. There's lines who feed off other lines and their emotion. And there's players that get their momentum and their positive feelings from the power play, which isn't clicking right now. So all those things kind of mixed together give you the kind of a mess what we saw last night. But at the end of the day, the outcome was there. They're still in that race for the President's Trophy, and I think that's a great feeling for this team.
Brandon Dubinsky told me last night, he said, we got to get our game together. We've got to crank it up. And I asked him, is it that important right now when you're playing a different team every night, or can you wait until the playoffs, or at least closer to the playoffs? And he said, absolutely not. We've got to get it going right now. So if they feel that way, maybe with, as you said, the games coming up on the schedule, those two things will merge and get them back to the Blue Jackets we've seen all year.
It's so difficult as a player because, you know, this, especially in this organization, they've been scratching and clawing every season just to get enough points, just to get that one or two or three or four points in and be in by the end of the season, and they're clicking along at a good rate. And always, everyone always talks about that team that is reaching its peak going into the playoffs. This team, I think, proved to itself and to its coach and found trust, and you got to love the way they ham and egg it with Torts and the team. But they've proved to themselves that they're legit. And they're trying to earn respect in the league. They don't have any respect still, but they're a team that teams are really hesitant to play. And I think that they've got that in the room, and that's something they're not going to lose. But as a player, it's hard to manufacture emotion. It's hard. It's difficult in an 82-game season to manufacture that. Listen, this town is a buzz. Everywhere these guys go right now, they're talking playoffs and what a special team they have and what a special run they could go on. With the goalie they have and the confidence they have, who knows? But there is a sense, and I get it as a player, like let's just get through these next few games and let's roll our sleeves up. We've done the work. Of course we want to finish as high as we can. But we want to go in and go head-to-head and let's get fired up. Because you know, Bob, you've been around teams, and I remember in Syracuse and in the minors, you get to the playoffs and even in the NHL, something changes. I remember when that last horn sounded in San Jose and in Philly when I was in the playoffs, and there's a different feel amongst your group. You look around the room on the way out after that last game, and you look at each other and you kind of say, okay, boys, now it's on. And it's just a feeling from within. It's not here because they can't manufacture that. They're obviously going to play for something, but they cannot wait to get things going after that last game.
Let's go back to Sergei Bobrovsky for a minute here, because you have played with Henrik Lundqvist as well, who's considered one of the best in the world, obviously. And Sergei is making his case to be right up there and was challenging for the crown right now, quite frankly, the way that he's playing. What is it about a goaltender that can do the things that Sergei Bobrovsky's been doing for the last month that just transforms a team?
Well, there's a confidence, and you can see it. I mean, when you play in front of a goaltender that lets out big rebounds, a goaltender lets in one leaky one every night, you play a completely different style. You play an unconfident game, a game that with hesitation. And at this level, the half a second of hesitation, the play is over. You're not going to have that passing lane. You're not going to have that puck. You're not going to be able to defend on that player because that's all they need. We saw a player last night in Jack Eichel that he doesn't need much time or space to make that puck go exactly where he wants. And when you have a goaltender like Sergei Bobrovsky, who not only performs as well as he does in game, the way he communicates with his defensemen and centermen, it's amazing to watch. He's such a fine teammate, a world-class teammate. But we watch him off the ice. His work regime, his attention to getting better is on a level that I don't think we can even – you can't fathom how much goes into his day, his preparation. He works on movements. He works on strength in strange positions because he knows, and it's paying off. And I think that his best point of the season, we still haven't seen it. I think it's still to come. And I sense that the players shooting on him on a daily basis in practice, the players that watch him prepare on a daily basis in practice and in the locker room, you feed off that because I think we all love to look up to someone who does things the right way. I think that's just human nature. And this guy does it the right way and gets rewarded. He's the leader of the Columbus Blue Jackets. He's the superstar. And that is a special thing to have.
When you talk about the communication that he has, you just made me think about the Sergei Bobrovsky that came here a couple of years ago in the trade and the guy that is here now. And I'm talking about his communication, quite frankly. Remember, he was uncomfortable doing interviews. He didn't want to talk. He might do a radio interview. He wouldn't talk on a camera in front of a TV audience. Now he is so much calm. His English is much better, too. So when you're talking about communication, does any of that factor into that? I know there's a way you can do it in hockey through body language and all that stuff, but does that make it easier as well that he's just more comfortable in all aspects, including the language?
Yeah, totally. I mean, and you look at baseball. You've been around baseball a lot, and I'm with my son now, my 8U travel team, of course. And, you know, it's like any sport, and you're talking to these kids. One of the most important things in baseball is communication. between the pitcher and the catcher, between the infield, between the outfield, the catcher and the outfield. It's amazing what communication does. And you watch Sergei Bobrovsky, even in football, he's almost like a quarterback in the sense of, yes, they feed off his body language, but every single whistle, almost every single whistle you see him, he is looking up at his defenseman after the whistle goes and he has the puck. There's either a nod, a smile, or some kind of verbal communication. They feed off his body language, obviously. And to watch how tight-knit, it stands out to me, Savard and Jack Johnson, mostly Savard with Bobrovsky. It seems to be those two work together as one. And then you throw in Jack Johnson and the centerman. It's amazing to see that the more that they're on the same page, the more they defend better. And we talked about it last night. After Torts mentioned in the post-game media scrum, he said we defended better last night. There was rebounds in front of Sergei, maybe six, that went out from the front of the net to the top of the hash marks, but not a chance there was any shot coming out of it because the layers and the five guys that are there on one page, and that is hard, and that is just it's a frustrating game to play against, and that's what the Blue Jackets have right now.
It's funny you bring up the baseball analogy, and I was just thinking while you were saying that, in baseball there are so many catchers that turn into managers because the game is in front of them the entire time. And the same is true for most goaltenders. Unless it's behind the net, you're watching the whole thing. You're watching what happens at the other end. You're watching them come down the ice at you. But yet, there's not so many goaltenders that are head coaches in this league, huh?
No, they're smarter. Is that what you were going for? No, I. You know, it's amazing. They're all analysts. And that's because I think you're right. The game kind of comes to them. And really, they're alone. You know, the coach does not coach talking to the goaltender very much. Very slim. I would say 15% of the dialogue is geared towards where you say, do you have that, Sergei? Do you have that, Jonas? Like, when they were in the puck and we want to do this, or off of it. You know, they're paying attention. But they're really on their own. It's them and the goalie coach and the backup goalie. So it's an interesting dynamic, and maybe that's why they wouldn't want to get behind the bench and start barking orders to guys who have no idea about their position and the way they see the game.
Yeah, so they'd just be a goalie coach, and then everybody knows what everybody's talking about, right?
Right, get on the same page as someone who understands what you're saying.
All right, this as we go down the stretch here, as we talked about the games that are coming up, and we talk about the mindset, let's talk about the power play, because you mentioned it a few minutes ago, and John Tortorella has basically said it is quickly becoming a liability for this team. They were the number one power play for months in this league. Now, all of a sudden, they cannot catch a break. And to me, and tell me if you agree with this, but I'm watching them last night, and I think the thing that has changed the most is their entry into the zone, because teams have taken away the entry that they had early in the year. They used to try to rush it in on the left-wing side. Wennberg would leave it for Foligno, tap it off the wall. Werenski would get it at the point, now skate along the blue line and set it up. Teams have set that, they've shut that off. And it seems to me that they're really, that's one of their biggest problems. They're having a hard time just entering the zone and can't even set up.
Yeah, and I think we got spoiled during that 16-game winning streak and earlier this season because, honestly, Bob, the power play would go out in the offensive zone faceoff, and they would either stay down there or if the other team did get to clear the puck down the zone, they would come through the neutral zone like a hot knife through butter, and they would enter the zone, and set up at will. And it was almost like automatic. It looked so easy that I think we got spoiled. I agree teams have adjusted. I think they gave it back to Zach Werenski a couple times, and, you know, that's a young guy carrying the puck through the neutral zone. Teams are going to focus on that. It's such an advantage to have your best players out there with an extra player over the opposition that you've got to adjust. And teams are smart. Teams look at tape. If there's one thing they meet on, it's the opposition power play and how to shut it down. And when you're top of the league, it's such a great challenge. Penalty killers take pride in it. Now, the other thing is you're playing teams who are out of it. So there's a lot of other plays that are made. I think riskier plays that are made sometimes that, penalty killers might not make if they're not in that position where things don't matter as much. I don't know if that draws into as much, but I do that. I take that into account when you have players that are maybe forcing it a little more, making you more uncomfortable, whereas if there was more to lose, maybe they'd sit back a little bit and let you make those plays on the outside and enter a little easy. So more of a stand-up game, I think. And, you know, the other thing is we know this time of year things get tighter, and that's one thing that is definitely tightened up around the league is the power play and the penalty kill. And I think that that's a factor, too. Teams take away more time and space in the last third of the season.
And we saw last night, Marcus Foligno did a really good job on the penalty kill forecheck, where you talk about Werenski bringing the puck up the ice. He went and he challenged him, and he challenged him early. He had let him come out from behind the net, but before he got to the top of the circles, he was on him and forcing him to make a decision, or, you know, he either has to drop it back or he has to accelerate and try to get around him. Do you think we'll see some more of that as we go into the playoffs?
Yeah, that's a great point because, you know, he is the engine kind of that drives that power play up the ice. He's got the speed, he's got his head up, and if they're going to go after one guy, you go after the young defenseman who's had success and really seems to be kind of the ace back there. So, yeah, I think you'll see that. And as you get in a seven-game series, you're going to see teams locked down on different situations that the Blue Jackets have had success on. Cam Atkinson's going to have to find a way to fight through checks and fight through different plays because they're going to be all over them. Just the way they're all over Sidney Crosby when the Blue Jackets play the Pittsburgh Penguins. Just the way they're all over Chris Letang and try to frustrate him, Evgeny Malkin. Players are going to be zoned in on, and it's definitely going to be guys like Seth Jones, Zach Werenski, and then Cam Atkinson and Wennberg up front.
Let's go on the other side and talk about the penalty kill. This penalty kill, once upon a time, was, I think, 18th in the league. They were down near the bottom third, but they have risen. They're in the top 10 now when it comes to the penalty kill. And to me, two guys that really define the penalty kill for this team, William Karlsson and Matt Calvert.
And that's why you won't see them come out of the lineup. And it's amazing to see the evolution of that because Matt Calvert had a couple injuries this season. There was different players put in there. You know, Sedlak might have had an opportunity to grow in that position. Those two guys, and you look at every line, there seems to be, around most of the league, it's not threes, it's mostly twos. And on that fourth line, it's the two of Karlsson and Calvert. And, you know, Sedlak has done a great job to get in there and play center ice. But they have chemistry. They have a dynamic that they've worked on, and they love it. I mean, we saw two games ago here with the Philadelphia Flyers. They had two quick offensive chances on the penalty kill right away, off a defensive zone faceoff. And it was because they're on the same page and they're quick. And, you know, if I'm chasing the puck, but I know that you're out there with me, Bob, and it's you're Calvert and I'm Karlsson because of my long, blonde, flowing hair, then I trust you. And I think that's what they have. They have trusted. I'm going to force this guy, but I know that you're going to be in the right position behind me so that if I need a little time bot for me to get back, I have that in you. So that there's a lot of trust, and that's a lot of it's a word that's been thrown around a lot here, excuse me, for the Columbus Blue Jackets this season. But it's because it's a big part of why they have success. And that penalty kill is a part of the reason. And then Torts trusting his team, I think that's just an awesome thing.
Yeah, and when you put David Savard and Jack Johnson on the back end, ooh, behind Calvert and Karlsson, that's a formidable matchup.
I would not want to play against those two guys. I'm telling you, they enjoy the rough game. They're smart together. And again, I talked about Bobrovsky and Savard working as one. I feel Jack Johnson and Savard work as one. It's so fun to watch them and how they feed and read off each other. They are a force to be reckoned with and a huge asset for the Columbus Blue Jackets. Two big boys that know how to lock it down.
One more thing I want to ask you about here. You mentioned Karlsson and Calvert. That's why they don't come out of the lineup. There are going to have to be choices, yes, to be made here once again. Oliver Bjorkstrand is getting better. He's going to come back into this lineup. John Tortorella has already said he's going to play, and you know he's going to play. His talent is something they very much need. And then the question is, who's not going to play? You've already got Lauri Korpikoski, who they acquired in a trade. He's been sitting for several games waiting to get a chance, but it's a real competition. Somebody's going to be very unhappy when they're not in the lineup.
Yeah, and that's unfortunately the part of having a successful, healthy team, and it's a good problem for the organization. But trust me, as a healthy scratch, I've been many times in the National Hockey League, it's not good for that individual. But that individual, whoever it is, has to realize for the good of the team and the opportunity to win a Stanley Cup, and you will be called upon. Because early in the first round, someone's going to get nicked up. And it's going to happen, and that's where you're going to need guys like Korpikoski to be ready now. Because if it's an injury in Game 2, we need you in Game 3 to come in at home or on the road to bring that level. So it's not about that individual, and I think the guys in the room understand that. It's hard not to be a little sour grapes, but at this point of the season, everybody wants to be in, but if I'm not in, gosh darn it, I'll be ready when you need me in any situation.
And for a coach, it's got to be a tough decision too, because you really don't want to upset any chemistry that you build all year.
That's an interesting point, and you know, I think it will be a veteran player that's scratched. I don't see Josh Anderson coming out. Obviously, Bjorkstrand's that factor in the top six. You cannot take Karlsson and Calvert out. They're your key penalty killers. So you could see a veteran player being scratched here. They've got five centermen playing in the lineup on a regular basis, which is, I think, you know, with Gagné in the middle, I think that's a key cog. I think that's a weapon to have, all those guys that can take critical faceoffs. We saw Gagné last night go 0-for-2 in one sequence. He got pulled off and sat on the bench, and they put Dubinsky out for the draw. And when that line hit, when Gagné's line mates got out of the defensive zone, Gagné got to come on the ice. That's humbling for a centerman. You want to take the big draws in the defensive zone. You don't want to be yanked off the ice for another teammate to do your job. So that's another good competition that's happening here. And there's definitely some tough – it's going to be a tough decision.
Tough decisions all around.
Not ours. That's the good news.
Yeah, that's really good news. We'll just talk about it and debate it whether it was the right decision, right?
Well, yeah, after the fact.
Right, exactly. Hindsight is 20/20, as they say. Coming up next, earlier today, I had a chance to sit down and talk with Blue Jackets rookie defenseman Zach Werenski. We'll have it for you as the Inside Edge continues on 97.1 The Fan. Welcome back to the Inside Edge on 97.1 The Fan. Bob McElligott along with Jody Shelley. Earlier today, I had a chance to sit down and talk with rookie defenseman Zach Werenski about where he was last year at this time, where he is now, and where he hopes that he's going.
Imagine where you were a year ago. I mean, you were just getting out of school, right, and getting into the American Hockey League about this time of the year?
Yeah, March 25th, I think my last game was with Michigan, and then I was in Cleveland not too long after, just a couple days.
I know you don't have a lot of time to reflect on a daily basis, but I mean, think back. What a whirlwind it's been for you in the past 367 days.
Yeah, it's been pretty insane. It's kind of weird thinking that my rookie season's almost over in the NHL. That's something I've dreamed of doing, and to be seven games away from finishing my rookie season is pretty crazy.
Not only finishing your rookie season, but finishing a really special season here with the Columbus Blue Jackets. Now, to you, it might be old hat because last year you turned pro, you won a championship. Here you've been winning all year long, but this is really special. Do you get the sense what it means to everybody in the room, in the community, in the short time that you've been here?
Yeah, definitely. I think what we've done this year as a team is, you know, it's pretty special. Obviously, I wasn't here the last few years, but, you know, the fans and the locker room, they've all been great. You know, what we've done as a team with the accomplishments and the records we've broke is definitely special. Obviously, we have a lot more moving forward, but it's been fun to be a part of.
Has it been an easy transition for you, college to pro, AHL, NHL?
I think the transition from college to AHL was a little bit tougher for me because I only had a couple days in between games. But
and they gave you no responsibility when you first started, right?
Yeah.
Just everything.
Yeah, exactly. Just go out there and play, which is sometimes a good thing. I think coming here, though, I had more of a foundation of what pro hockey is after playing 24 games in the American League and going through a full playoffs. So coming here, I thought it was a little bit easier than going from college to the AHL. But obviously, there's definitely things that you can't prepare for, like the long season, the long schedule, the grind of the NHL. So it was definitely tough this year, too.
In the college season, you basically play on weekends, right? And you practice during the week. But there is downtime. There is that recovery time. Have you found it harder to find recovery time for yourself in this league with the travel and the games?
Yeah, I think so. I think in the middle of the season, kind of around game 40, was when I really started to feel it. It's something you can't prepare for. You just have to go through it in order to understand what it's like. But as of late, I've kind of started to figure out how to recover properly and kind of what to do in my off time and what to do on the off days and stuff like that. So I felt a lot better on the ice.
Did you seek out help from anybody in that? Just advice, whether it's from your teammates here, whether it's somebody else that you know. I know you have friends like Dylan Larkin that play in the NHL. Did you reach out to try to figure out your own path through advice from others?
I think you're kind of always trying to figure out things that can help you. You know, just trying to pick up on what guys say or stuff you hear in the locker room and what guys do on their off days. Obviously, I talked to Dylan quite a bit, so I learned some stuff from him. But I think it's just kind of finding your own thing and just sticking with it. Everyone's different, so there's no two people that are going to be the same when it comes to recovery and what they do in their off time. So it just kind of took some time for me to figure out what I wanted to do and kind of how I recovered and took my mind off hockey. And once I kind of figured that out, I felt like I've been feeling a lot better at the rink.
John Tortorella has said in the last couple of weeks that the five-day mandated break was the best for you more than anybody else because it gave you a chance to kind of reset and breathe, maybe heal a little bit. And you've come back strong after that. Do you agree?
Yeah, I totally agree. I kind of had that circled on my calendar, just kind of waiting for it. I wasn't playing great hockey leading up to it, and I wasn't feeling great at the rink. And after that five-day break, I came back ready to go. I felt refreshed. Obviously, it's an exciting time of year, so it's really easy to come to the rink and be excited and have fun. So I think that really helped me.
Were you able to just get away from hockey? I know that you're a hockey aficionado. That's your life. That's what you do all the time. But in those 5 days, were you able to separate a little bit?
Yeah, definitely. I rarely thought about hockey. Obviously, I kind of just check scores sometimes laying in bed and kind of see how other teams were doing and stuff like that. But when it came to the Blue Jackets and hockey and what we were doing, I kind of completely checked out and just took my mind off of it. And I think that's why it helped me so much.
And the other thing about that break is when you came out of it, not just you, but all of your teammates, there was really a six-week focus. That's how much time is left in the regular season. And is it helpful when there's an ending point where you can see it? Unlike in January and February where you know you have the points to get into the playoffs. You don't talk about it, but you know you have the points to get in. And now it's just a matter of getting there. But when you come out of the break, it's 6 weeks. There's a focus to get to the top of the division, and you can really zero in.
Yeah, I think we have our sights set on, you know, on the playoffs right now. Obviously, we have 7 games left, and we want to finish as high as we can and be the number one team in the NHL. But it's kind of nice knowing, you know, where we are and what we have coming up here. We can kind of start to see that finish line and what's past it. So everyone's really excited coming back from break. We knew what we had to do. We knew how much time we had left. We wanted to put ourselves in the best situation possible for playoffs, and I think we're doing that right now.
Talking with Zach Werenski, Blue Jackets defenseman, I watch you play against the best in the game, and I watch you win your battles against the best in the game. And sometimes I sit back and go, this is a 19-year-old rookie, and look what he's doing to Connor McDavid. Look what he's doing to Sidney Crosby. Was there a point where you felt intimidated? Because if there was, you look like that in October to me, not just in March going into April to me. Were you intimidated by any of these guys at any point?
I don't think there's ever really intimidation, at least in my own experience. I think you just have to go out there and play hard and know you can play with them, kind of have a self-confidence. That's something I think I've always had. Obviously, there's times when you go up against guys like Crosby and Ovechkin and guys I grew up watching where you kind of sit there and watch them for a second. But I don't think there's ever intimidation. I just think you know what you have to do. You have to know that you belong and know that you can handle it. So that's kind of how I approach those games. But there's definitely times where I caught myself watching them for sure.
That first game against Pittsburgh, did you find yourself watching Crosby? And did you realize if I give him another half second while I watch what he's doing, it's going to be too late. He's going to beat us.
Oh, yeah. I was not my greatest game. I think Crosby scored in like my second shift against him. And he beat me, so I caught myself watching him. But after that, I felt like the second time we played him and the third time, I felt a lot better.
And it's a learning lesson, right? I mean, that's what this has been about for you and for a lot of your teammates. Everything that you've done has been a learning lesson in this league.
Yeah, definitely. It's not going to be all ups. There's going to be some downs in there and stuff you have to learn from. So it's kind of how I approach it. If it's not great, I'm going to learn from it and just move on and be better next time. So. I think there's a lot of things that I've learned from this year and things I'm going to continue to learn from moving forward. Obviously, the playoffs are, you know, it's way different, so I'm going to learn a lot of stuff there. And it's just about kind of taking those bad games in and those rough patches and learning from them and turning them into something.
Last year when you joined the then Lake Erie Monsters, and they were getting ready for the playoff push and going into the playoffs, what does it mean to you this year to be with a team that has built all of this? Now, you guys have done the work, and you've been a part of it since day one. Doing the work to get a chance to play in the Stanley Cup playoffs?
Yeah, it finally seems like it's all really paying off. The hard summer of training, knowing what towards training camp was going to be like, and then going through it and going through it as a team and kind of, you know, getting through it together. And then starting the year off with a chip on our shoulder, trying to earn respect in this league and finally doing that. And obviously we have a lot more respect to earn come playoff time, but It's really exciting time right now. Everyone's really excited for playoffs. We felt like what we've done this year has really paid off, and we should be proud of what we've done, but we still have a lot to do moving forward.
You know, for us here in Columbus, coming into this season, we had seen glimpses of Josh Anderson. He had been up and down. Same with Oliver Bjorkstrand, had been here a little bit. Lucas Sedlak had never been here until making the team out of training camp. Now we're seeing more of what they can do. You've seen them at their best in the playoffs, and you went through it with them. What can we expect from these guys if they perform like they did last year for you?
Yeah, I think you can expect a lot. Obviously, they're unbelievable players in their own right. Last year in the playoffs, all those guys stepped up in big situations, scored some big goals, made big plays. So I expect that this year in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Those are guys that have been through it in the professional level, and last year they really stepped up when the team needed them. So I expect that this year too, and so should you guys.
Who has been the most influential guy for you on this team?
That's tough. We have a great leadership group, and everyone really talks to me and helps me out. But it's got to go to my D partner, Seth Jones. Although he's just 22 years old, he's played 200-and-something games in this league, and carries such a big role as a defenseman and a young guy. And me being able to play with him, I've kind of learned, and just from watching him and learned from stuff he's talked about and stuff he's told me. And without him, I don't think I'd have the year I've had so far. So I think he's been the most influential to me.
I was hoping you would go that way, because that's what I figured. Just watching the way you guys play, the way you started in October, and it was a good pairing then, but I think it's a great pairing now, the way you pick up. One guy makes a mistake, the other guy makes up for the mistake. There's just a good cohesiveness between you two, isn't there?
Yeah, definitely. He doesn't make too many mistakes, but whenever I make one, I know he's there to bail me out. So it's I think we work well together.
You're 19 years old, and I think people forget that because they watch you play in this league and watch you play so well. But look, when I was 19 years old, I don't even know what the heck I was doing. I was still at home. I was probably screwing around, doing dumb stuff. And you're out here playing pro hockey at its highest level. What do you do when you're not playing hockey? What do you do to fill your time as a young guy that, ends up having a lot of time on your hands, actually?
Yeah, I have more time than I could have really ever expected in the NHL. We have a lot of downtime here, and I don't really do much. Whenever we get downtime, I kind of like to just take it and relax. Talk to friends from home. I play Xbox with them. Go to the mall sometimes. Just kind of stupid stuff to pass time. But as of late, I've realized how long and how hard of a grind the season is, that whenever I get downtime, I'm just trying to lay down and do nothing. So I'm not too exciting. I don't really do too much, but it's good to have as much downtime as we do.
When you're playing Xbox, are you playing hockey or are you playing other stuff?
I play hockey sometimes. Yeah. I play NHL, yeah.
Beat your friends at hockey?
Yeah, for the most part.
I would hope so, right?
I beat Andy in it. I beat Josh.
Yeah, so you live with Josh Anderson, right?
Yeah, I do.
So you can't ever get away from that guy?
No, roommates at home and roommates on the road.
But that's got to be great, right? I mean, a good bond there, and I'm sure by now you know each other extremely well.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's always good when you can go through your rookie year with someone kind of in the same boat as you. So me and him have grown extremely close this year. I met him for the first time in Cleveland last year. We kind of hit it off right away, and we're roommates this year, and I think it's worked really well.
I want to ask you about this last stretch of games that you have. It's going to be a big challenge. Carolina is still hoping to get into the playoffs. You got to play them on the road. Then you get Chicago, one of the best teams in the league, just like you guys are, and you come back, Washington, Pittsburgh. How much are you looking forward to the challenge of this next stretch of four games?
Yeah, definitely. It's going to be playoff hockey for sure. Like you said, Carolina is a team right now that's been playing really good hockey and fighting for a playoff spot, and the other three teams are teams that are in the playoffs and are some of the best in the NHL. So I'm really excited. I know all the guys are excited. It's going to be a good test for us leading up into playoffs.
We mentioned earlier that you're very good friends with Dylan Larkin of the Detroit Red Wings. It's ironic, isn't it? Your first year in the league and the Red Wings will not go to the playoffs for the first time in 25 years. And I know that you grew up watching them and rooting for them. So your whole life, they've been in the playoffs. Now they're not, and you're in. How weird is that for you?
Yeah, it's pretty different for sure. All my friends are Blue Jackets fans now, so which that's a good thing. But obviously it's a little bit different. Since before I was even born, they were making the playoffs every year. So to not see them in this year is a little bit different, but I'm not too worried about them right now. I'm just worried about us.
I've got to ask you one more thing. Have you taken the time to kind of dream about the playoffs? I'm sure you have since you were a kid, but now you're right here on the cusp. You get a chance in a couple of weeks to start the run for the Stanley Cup. Have you thought of how that's going to be?
Yeah, I thought about it pretty much my whole life, so it's pretty exciting that it's really close. Obviously, these last couple of weeks, you see the commercials on TV, the Stanley Cup commercials, and just kind of all the buzz around it. So I'm really excited. I know a lot of guys are excited. A lot of us young guys are excited, guys who have never been through it. We've thought about this moment for a long time, so it should be pretty exciting.
You see those commercials, not many Blue Jackets highlights in those commercials. Maybe you guys can change that.
Yeah, we're hoping so.
That would be good. That's a plan, right?
Yep, definitely.
Zach, thank you very much. I appreciate you taking the time, and best of luck the rest of the way.
Yeah, thank you.
It is hard to believe that last year he was just coming out of college and going into the American Hockey League. Look how much he's grown.
It's incredible, isn't it? I mean, even listening to him talk there in that interview, he's such a mature kid, and we saw his parents a few times this season here coming down from Michigan to watch him play, and it's just, you can get a sense from hearing him talk and from talking to his mom and dad, that they're a real tight-knit, simple family with great values, and that's one thing I think the Blue Jackets have done a fine job in, is they have great people in this organization, and it really shows. And Zach Werenski, and the way he plays the game, I don't know if we get a full appreciation every night for what he does, because there's a lot of situations he's in that I would not want to be in, because it would be a yard sale of a mess all over the ice. He's poised with the puck. He's got his head up, and he's working on his game. I love Bradshaw coaching him in the defensive part of the game, and I love John Tortorella as his leader. He's got a great dynamic with Anderson. Yeah, that was a great great catching up with him on that, and he's still a kid. Plays Xbox and hangs out with his buddies. We forget that sometimes, and, you know, there's always those mistakes that stick out, but with Zach, he'll make a mistake, and seconds later, he will right that ship almost immediately. So it's fun to watch him grow. We're going to have fun watching him for many years that he's going to be here, and it's so great to hear you catch up with him on. And you're right, his skill set in one season, I don't know how he's done that, but if he keeps his trajectory, look out.
Yeah, and in any other year, he probably is, to me, he's a clear-cut Calder Trophy winner in any other year, but he happens to be in the rookie class of Austin Matthews and Patrick Laine, and especially with Matthews, to me, because Toronto is more than likely going to the playoffs now, which is going to get a lot of attention for him.
Listen, we saw a superstar, a young superstar last night in the Buffalo Sabres and Jack Eichel that I think has been forgotten about this season. Missed 22 games, but I'll tell you what, that kid is a special kid, dynamic, a game changer, second behind McDavid. But with McDavid exploding on the season, this season, top of the NHL in the scoring race, right up there with Crosby and Marchand, it's incredible. And then the two rookies you just mentioned, Laine, Matthews, both in Canada. The exposure is way better. You got to face that reality. Marner's up there too. And then, yeah, Zach Werenski's kind of forgotten a little bit, but he's made some noise. And I get the sense with Zach that he wants to make some more noise. He wants to chase down any number he can. And that's something about that kid that I've noticed just from observing and listening to him talk. He's hockey. He's a hockey guy. Like, he's a full-time hockey guy. He's not a guy that can't wait to get out of the rink to go do something else, go shopping or go. He enjoys watching hockey in the night. He plays hockey on Xbox. He knows all about the league. He's very in tune. He talks about it on social media. It's hard not to know the records he's broken and what Matthews has done, because he's on Twitter. He's connected with the game all the time. And I admire that, because as a young kid, there's a lot of distractions when you make it to the NHL and you've got some money in your pocket now. There's other distractions, but this kid is focused and just I think he's got a leadership quality in a kind of a strange way for the older guys, because he really does have that full-time hockey, and he makes it cool, which I think is a pretty awesome thing.
Yeah, that's why I was surprised when he said that on the five-day break, he disengaged, other than checking some scores at night. He just got away. But that turned out to be the best thing for him. He is back to the guy he was at the beginning of the year. Coming up next, Jody and I will break it down even further, look at who the Blue Jackets might face in the playoffs, who's hot in the league, who's cooling off. It's the time of year where we're getting set for the postseason, but there are still games to be played. We'll continue right after this with the Inside Edge on 97.1 The Fan. Welcome back to the Inside Edge. Blue Jackets in Carolina tomorrow to take on the Hurricanes, a Hurricanes team that is hoping to get into a wild card position. And what a wild position that's turned out to be, that second wild card spot. It looked like Toronto was going to be the team there. All of a sudden, they have vaulted up in the Atlantic Division. Now it's the Boston Bruins trying to hang on to that spot. The New York Islanders were there. They have fallen out. The Tampa Bay Lightning is still lurking. And now the Hurricanes have themselves back in the picture. Who do you think is going to get that?
Why would you ask me such a tough question? Like, who?
It's the last segment of the show. I thought you'd be ready for a tough question.
I will change that answer every single night. I mean, it's one of those things that, I mean, I don't even know if Toronto's safe yet. They've got 7 games left. They're at 87, and they're 4 points ahead of Tampa. If you would have asked me 2 nights ago, I would have said Tampa, because they're on that rumble. They pulled Vasilevsky. They put him back in. They rumble back and tie it up and get the winner in overtime. It's incredible what they got going on down there. I'm shocked that the Islanders are even still in the picture, but they're still there. To me, their goaltending's not strong enough. It seems like they got the three-headed monster now again. Boston, to me, they're surprising. I'm surprised at the Bruins. Maybe I don't give them enough respect, but with Bergeron and Chara and Marchand and Rask, why wouldn't I give them respect? So I might talk myself into the Bruins being there, actually, because they've got experience and they've got some mojo and they've got goaltending. So you got to put those things together. The Leafs, I tell you what, Curtis McElhinney last night, I was so impressed that he got that win. What a situation to go into. I don't know if you would want to do it, but not a chance I'd want to do it. That is the New York Yankees of the National Hockey League. They're in the playoffs. Do you want to be the goaltender to go in and be the start of the fall of that of their season? So if you're going, I'm going to answer your question now, Bob. I think Boston, Carolina, or Tampa will be there.
Wow, thank you, Jody. That really cleared it up so much. But the whole point is, it's not clear. It's not even close to being clear.
Let me ask you the opposite of that now. The Blue Jackets, who do you want to play first round?
Who do I want to play first round? It's a team that's not even in the playoff picture. That would be great. But, no. Listen.
Do you want to win the number one seed and play the second wild card? As it matches up, if it's Tampa on a roll, or do you want to play Pittsburgh or Washington?
Yeah, see, again, this is why everybody's talking about going back to the old 1-8 formula
right.
This year, because this is exposing, the treacherous terrain of this lineup. But here's the thing. If it's Tampa, I'm not so keen on that, because Steven Stamkos is going to be coming back, right? And they've got their problems figured out. They traded their guys. They're set now as a team. As you said, they came back from being down 4-1 to Chicago and beat them in overtime. So nothing safe there. But I like the way the Blue Jackets match up against the Pittsburgh Penguins. It sounds like suicide to want to go up against the defending Stanley Cup champs. But I just like the way that they face them. Although the Penguins have a list of about 8 guys that are now day-to-day and are going to be back. They'll probably be back before the Tuesday game in Pittsburgh next week. So maybe I can answer that better after that game.
Yeah, so maybe we're a little premature on our questioning. Maybe we'll do it in next week's show. But it is it's such a fun thing to talk about. And it's fun to be in this position, because the scenarios, well, there's still 5 of them. There's still 5, maybe 6 scenarios for the Columbus Blue Jackets and who they will play. If you look at it, it's either Washington, Pittsburgh, Toronto, New York, or sorry, Toronto, Boston, Tampa, Islanders, or Carolina. So it's to be determined, but I think that the picture will be much clearer Tuesday night on the way back from Pittsburgh.
I totally agree with you.
It'll be clear.
And that'll be just in time for next week's show.
It'll be clear, exactly. But I think it'll be clear after that. The Blue Jackets have got just 4 games left on the schedule, I believe. They've only got 3 more home games left.
No, 3 more games after that.
There's 3 more games after that. So the Blue Jackets are at that point of the season where by Tuesday, maybe even by the Washington game on Sunday night here at Nationwide Arena, maybe by 9 o'clock that night, things will be clear. But I doubt it.
All right, but maybe by next week when we do this show again, we'll know a little bit more about what we're talking.
Definitely.
And he'll change his mind in 30 seconds. But we'll be off the air. That's going to do it for tonight's edition of the Inside Edge. Tomorrow night, Blue Jackets and Carolina Hurricanes, 6:45 pregame coverage right here on the Fan. For Jody Shelley, I'm Bob McElligott, saying so long and thanks for listening to 97.1 The Fan.
This has been the Inside Edge with Jody Shelley and Bob McElligott.
And I got 2 words for you. Game over.
March with us. Brought to you by Ohio Health, Nationwide Insurance, Eldorado Scioto Downs, and Huntington.
On your flagship station for the Columbus Blue Jackets, Sports Radio 97.1 The Fan.